Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello, Group Director at InfoTrends, and I'm delighted that you could join us for our webinar today titled The Silver Bullet for Driving Sales and Impressions, Data. And it's sponsored by Canon Solutions America. You know, the concept of data-driven marketing isn't new, but with the explosion of sales channels and rising customer expectations, marketers and marketing services providers need to leverage data to deliver a very, very personal experience. The challenge today is that it's not just about collecting offline data, but it's also connecting it with online data that includes things like browsing behaviors and social networks. And once all that data is analyzed, it can be used to produce that highly personalized marketing campaign that's tailor-made for a specific customer. And so what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be really talking to you about trends in personalization, that requirement to deliver a very personalized experience. And then you're going to hear from Luke Heffron from SG360, and Luke's going to share with you how he's collaborating with marketers to truly drive that personalized experience. And so what we'll be covering, as I indicated, is Luke Heffron is joining me. And Luke is the Senior Vice President at Empirical Insights SG360. And we'll be talking about that whole concept of how to leverage data to drive sales. Before we get started, what I would like to do is just spend a minute talking to you about how to enjoy the webinar today. If you're having any technical difficulties, you can let us know by using the Q&A box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking the help widget. We'll be taking questions throughout the webinar today, and so you can use the Q&A box to actually submit a question. Make sure that you've disabled pop-up blockers. And if you want to see what the console can do, click on the Tips for Attendee widget for the complete rundown. Now, let's get started. The topics that we'll be covering today include, first and foremost, I'll be talking about why data-driven marketing is so important. Luke's going to share with you real-world practical experiences relative to how SG360 makes data work with some excellent case histories and examples. We'll wrap up with a few recommendations and conclusions and any questions that we didn't get to throughout the course of the webinar. Now, I'm going to start by talking about why data-driven marketing is so important. This is one of my favorite, what I'll categorize as puns, but if a wind drives a ship, what drives your customer's business? And it's absolutely sales, and there's no pun intended there. But then what drives sales? Well, in a lot of instances, that marketing executive needs to precondition the market and build awareness for the sales force. And then when you look at what drives marketing, well, marketing is driven by great data. And the one thing that we've learned is that big data is here to stay. One of my favorite quotes is from Peter Sondergaard from Gartner, and he says, you know, information is the oil of the 21st century, and analytics are the combustion engine. What we're seeing in the marketplace today is that enterprises are faced with challenges in collecting, managing, and applying a deluge of data. And it used to be that people would say, I don't have enough data to do a high-quality personalized campaign. Well, that's all changed. What you've got now is a data warehouse that's loaded up with transactional data, demographic data, behavioral data, and then there's all the data that you're gathering from sources like search engines and mobile programs. And so what you've got to take a look at is that you need to understand and look at all those sources, ranging from click tracking to preference management for customer communications, geolocation information, transactional data, and those social conversations. All of those play into that concept of big data. If you look at it from a historical perspective, marketers typically had focused on transactional data. But what we've got now are all these additional sources coming into play. And what happens is that's typically referred to as unstructured data. And that's information that doesn't reside in a traditional row and column database. As you might expect, it's the exact opposite of structured data that's stored in fields in a database. It can include text and multimedia content. It can include email messages, word processing documents, videos, photos, and audio files. What people are finding is that 80 to 90% of the data in any organization today is, in fact, unstructured. The other component that's changed a lot is the fact that we used to talk about terabytes of data. Well, that's actually transitioned into petabytes of data. For those unfamiliar, a terabyte is a multiple of the unit bytes for digital information. The prefix tera represents the fourth power of 1,000 and means 10 to the 12th, and therefore a terabyte is actually 1 trillion bytes of information. Now, when you look at a petabyte is 10 to the 15th, and all I know is, whatever it is, it's a lot of data. One of my favorite cartoons is the following one. And it says, you know, we've collected 250 terabytes of data about our customers, and the software has analyzed it. And the executive says, well, what does it tell us? And the respondent says, we have 250 terabytes of data. And the real truth is that it isn't about getting data. There's a dearth of information. It's exactly the opposite. With data becoming coming in from all sides, what we're finding is that people are drowning in data, but they're starving for information. And so what we're looking for and what companies are looking for is, how do I do a better job at managing that? Let me give you some of the compelling issues that are out there today. Domo is a cloud-based venture that helps CEOs, and one of the studies that they did surveyed more than 200 marketing executives. And the big message was that there's a disconnect between what marketers need from their data and what they're actually getting. And the first question that was asked was, to what extent do you agree or disagree with the following statement? I'm able to handle the volume of marketing data that's available for analysis without feeling overwhelmed. And what you see in this slide is that basically 66% said that they either strongly disagreed or disagreed with that statement, meaning I really do have that feeling of being overwhelmed. The other concept in the study was that marketers rely on data, but they're having a hard time getting what they need. The slide has two pie charts, and basically what it says is, I rely on marketing data to do my job well. And what you saw was that 86% of the respondents says, absolutely, I need data. But then the next question was, do you have access to the marketing data that you need? And in that instance, what you saw was 55% of the people surveyed either strongly disagreed or disagreed with that statement. And so the real message in this is that 50% of marketers are looking at reports that they get, and they still lack a lot of the key information that they need to do an effective job at managing their business. In fact, one of the key elements that's missing from data is return on investment, and 40% of them said they don't have access to return on the investment information. Now, all of that being said, what you're seeing is that people, the end consumers, really do want personalization, and that's what marketers want to deliver. InfoTrends actually did a study. We surveyed more than 1,000 enterprises, and we asked them what percentage of their communications actually fell into specific categories. And what we saw was that when you looked at the data, 62% of it was personalized or segmented in some way. 29% was personalized one-to-one with very individualized messaging. And then 33% was actually segmented one to few. And so enterprises really do want to do a good job at targeting their specific audiences. The other thing that enterprises told us was that the level of personalization is on the rise. and more of their communications were dealing with high complexity customization, and that meant that they incorporated variable pictures and or images. They included variable blocks of text, and they actually included dynamic composition of sections of the specific marketing piece. When asked about the challenges that they were encountering, no big surprises here. What the enterprise marketing executive said was, hey, I'm having a hard time tracking responses. I don't understand in a lot of instances what the primary drivers are for a specific campaign response. I'm struggling with mining and analyzing the data. And then, of course, I've got to deal with things like regulatory compliance. In parallel with talking to the enterprises, we also talked to service providers, and we looked at a number of different companies in terms of what their primary businesses were, and they included general commercial as well as an array of different printers. And what we did is we asked them what types of services they were providing relative to their customer base. And what we saw was that very few of them, less than half, were offering cross-media services to their customer base today. Now, the other component was that there's a gap from a service provider perspective in terms of variable data printing services. And what we found was that 41% of the survey respondents not offering cross-media services also don't offer variable data capability. We asked printers and service providers why they weren't doing it, and they said lack of interest from clients. And yet what you see is that the marketing executives clearly want to offer those customized communications. Some said it didn't fit into their business model, or they lacked the right level of technical skills and technology infrastructure. And so from a business perspective, what you want to make sure that happens is that you're really resonating with the end customer's needs. We also asked service providers if they were integrating with their customers' data sources. And what we found was that in some instances, about 46% of the instances, they were doing it with some customers. But again, a lack of integration relative to dealing with the customer's data infrastructure. Service providers, when asked what types of data services they offered, said we do mail processing management, you know, postal management, we help them cleanse, we do some project management, but really not the complex analytics that customers are requiring to do more complex customization and leverage all of the data assets. When we asked the service providers what their challenges were relative to offering that capability, it was cost, they didn't have a company culture that dealt with it, and they weren't sure which initiatives would be most beneficial. So those are all the kinds of things that when you take a look at it, service providers need to be able to address and deal with. Now, the other factor is, for those companies that were offering data-driven cross-media services to their end customer base, there was a clear set of benefits: new revenue streams, expansion of customer base, differentiation from competitors. And one of the other things that people saw when they did a great job at offering more value-added cross-media data-oriented services was a marked increase in terms of overall digital print volume. And in fact, the mean increase was almost 20%. Now, not without challenges, because what you find is that the sales cycle is elongated when I'm selling a cross-media variable data campaign. And what you're finding is that the average sales cycle, if I'm going in as a service provider to sell that, is 5.2 months. But it's because you're selling them a very comprehensive project and program, and it's going to change the way that that end customer, in fact, actually does business. Now, the reason that it's so important, though, for your clients is it links to that end consumer. And we did a consumer media trend study, and what we found was, regardless of age, consumers have come to expect a very personalized experience. And in fact, when you looked across the various age groups, from 13 all the way to 55 plus, more than 60% of consumers wanted a personalized experience. As the age groups went up, they wanted to control personal information. The other component, and you'll hear a bit more about this from Luke, is that experience and that personalization needs to cut across all channels. When we talked to those consumers, 84% of them said that they wanted a seamless experience regardless of the channel. And so if I'm doing a personalized message in a direct mail piece, I want to make sure that I've got that same level of personalization when I'm dealing with an email campaign or when I'm dealing with a mobile message via text. And so with that as a backdrop, what you've got are multiple facets. First of all, marketers need help with data. We're seeing service providers, for the most part, lag behind the requirements for the marketplace. And what marketers are trying to do is deliver an experience that meets the end consumer requirements. What I'm going to do now is turn it over to Luke, and what Luke's going to do is Luke's going to share with you how they're dealing with this at SG360. And he's going to share with you a number of very, very explicit examples relative to the kind of work they're doing and how they're interfacing and engaging with marketers. So, Luke, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Barb. So before I jump into specifically what I'm going to talk about, I'll give you a little background on SG360. We are based out of Wheeling, Illinois, which is just north of Chicago O'Hare Airport. So we're Midwest-based. We are an employee-owned company, and we've had a recent acquisition of another company that we're very proud of, Lehigh Direct. So with that organization and ours together, we are still centrally located across four different campuses and just a little bit under a million square feet of production. Within that production, we have essentially everything from some of the largest, and I believe the largest, inline web press down to cut sheet and web, four-color digital, and pretty much everything in between. So we can be very objective when we're sitting down with our clients about where the best solution is and the best fit is going to be for them. So the presentation is really about, though, how can we differentiate ourselves as printers beyond just horsepower or specialized types of equipment that we have on the floor. And that's really where my focus is. We have, first of all, branded ourselves SG360. We were formerly Sagerdahl Corporation. And in that branding, that 360, we have created four different arcs of capabilities and services to our clients. And they can, of course, pick and choose whichever is going to be the best fit for them. So brand directions is one of them. That's really the creative side. Brand emotions is the creative side. Brand directions is really what I'm going to talk with you about today, and that is, how are we leveraging data to motivate action? The second one is brand emotions, which is, once we understand that, how are we going to create that visual experience, whether it's in print or digital online? The next one is, of course, the direct mail side, which we call impressions. How are we going to produce that? And then on the expression side, we do all of our own in-house letter shop, commingling, finishing, logistics, mailing, everything. So that's that piece. So we've pretty much covered the full circle for the client. The area that I'm really focused on is twofold. As Barb said, how do we differentiate ourselves from other clients or from other competition? So we have what we call integrated marketing services. One side, and how we came up with this, and I'll talk about this a little bit, but how we came up with this is really understanding what are the data challenges right now. And is in one of the slides that Barb showed, one of the highest reasons for and challenges that are out there are disparate workflows. So what we did was partner with ExactTarget and we have built an application into the ExactTarget format. I'm not going to go through that with you today, but that is one capability that we've built. So in terms of workflow, we can truly integrate email and online delivery with direct mail in full triggered and calendar-based campaigns. This is a great quote recently from the Harvard Business Review, and it's one of the few slides I'll read to you as I go through this. Relational intelligence. Many firms think of customers still as resources to be harvested for the next sale opportunity rather than looking for certain kinds of interactions. And that is specifically what Barb closes out with, is to have a personalized interaction with the brand and the brand with the customer, regardless of their age. And as I'll explain a little bit further, regardless of basically any other type of demographic that you can identify that shopper with, everybody wants a personalized experience. And really what that personalized experience boils down to is understanding what's going to motivate them to say yes versus no or maybe. So this is kind of one of the only second slides I promise that I'll read to you, but this is important because how do we differentiate ourselves? How do you as a print provider differentiate yourselves for your customers so you stand out? So this is my opinion. This is one way that we've approached it. It's not the only way. But the first one is to understand where direct marketing is today and where it's going. And Barbara's done a great job of setting that up for us. The second one is identify where the holes exist. And she's shared some of that with us as well in some of those data challenges tables. But where are the holes? And then find a solution for those holes that you can be passionate about. I think that's really critical, and we hear that all the time, but it's not to be understated. If you're not passionate about the piece and the extra services that you're offering, you know, that's clearly going to come through. The next piece is pick your spot. I'm really adamant about not being everything to everybody. And what I mean by that is when I described SG360, we have the full circle of services, but every customer has a very specific pain point that they're looking for help with. So pick that spot, really understand it, and help them with that. The next piece is we can't do everything by ourselves, especially if we're working towards bringing additional value to our customers. So another term that's kind of overused is partnering or partnerships. But I mean that you really need to be selective with how you're going about finding a partner to help you bring that additional value, as opposed to doing everything internally. And then the most important one is it has to be actionable. I love that cartoon that Barbara had where the person was saying, you know, we've got 250 terabytes of data, and essentially the only thing we can tell you is we've got a lot of data. And the customer doesn't want to hear that. We've all heard that a million times. What's really happening and what's really working is actionable solutions, and I'll give you some examples of that. So first of all, my first statement was where the market is and where it's going. So what's the current role of data in direct marketing? Barbara showed you a slide that showed structured and unstructured data sources and where they're coming from. And what I've done and what I do for our clients is break down where that data is being applied to direct marketing. And there are some very specific components within direct marketing where data is being applied. And we all know these, but I'll go through them real briefly. So the first one is the list. Who and where are your customers? How did you find them? How are you communicating with them? Customers and prospects. The second one is how are you segmenting those customers out, if at all? The next one is the design. Again, regardless of if it's online or offline, what is that communication going to look like? The next one is the offer. What's the call to action? So data, of course, is driving what that offer and what that incentive is going to be. And when you start to look back up into the list and into the segmentation, it drives it even more granular. The next one is the channel. And again, data can help us point what channel are we going to. It isn't always just an email opt-in. It might be data that's pointing to why people are responding to one channel versus another. The next one is the format. That's pretty obvious. That's going to be driven by the channel, so not so much by data. The next one is a cadence. How often and why are we communicating this often or this frequently or this infrequently? That's completely or almost completely driven by data, of course. The next one is messaging. What are you going to say and how are you going to say it and to whom? How personalized are you going to get? Is it going to be to the individual level? Is it going to be a segment level, a group level? And what are the reasons behind that? And that's what I'm going to be talking with you about today. That's a niche that we have found that very little data is being applied to and very little knowledge is being used to really understand that messaging and understand it from a motivation standpoint. And then the last one is analytics. So what are we doing in terms of performance analytics? And again, ROI was a big one. It's a big hole out there right now that needs to be filled. So being able to track responses, being able to help customers understand if we do go personalize them and it costs us X more per piece, why are we going to do that? How are we going to measure that return? So the first thing is really understanding these, and then secondly, finding where there might be a hole that is a fit for your organization.
Luke, I do have a quick question from our audience. And one of the things that they asked was, you know, you've got the list and, you know, who and where are your best customers? Could you share with the audience how you go after getting the right list pulled together with a client, both from the perspective of leveraging their data as well as appending third-party data?
I'll try. That's a really
okay.
Broad-based question because it really depends on the specific customer. And of course, and what they're trying to accomplish. So, for example, clearly, I assume that you're talking about an acquisition, or the person asking the question is asking about
an acquisition campaign.
So, from an acquisition campaign, the first question I always ask is, are your new customers or new prospects that you're going after, do they look like, do you want them to look like your existing customers? And what I mean by that is, years ago, Harley Davidson, as an example, when they were doing acquisition marketing, they wanted to keep going after who they thought were their same customers. It also happened with the Ford Mustang when the new one came out. Everybody thought that the existing customers looked like what the new customers are going to look like. What Harley found out in a long, slow process was that the new customers are white collar and they're not all, you know, the type of audience that they thought they had in the past. And what Ford found out was, it wasn't the young crowd that were driving around in the foreign, you know, the foreign cars that are interested in the Mustang. It was all of us old guys that are trying to relive our childhood. So the first thing is, are your new customers going to look like your old ones? If they are, then you start looking at their past data and understanding that and then working forward from there. Does that make sense?
Sure. Are there any specific resources that you use to augment an existing client's data?
Well, we have one specific company that we work with that we're that's very, very responsive. They're experts in special programs like new movers, and they're called Speedion. But,
okay.
You know, a lot of our customers already have existing list providers, so it isn't always a matter of bringing one in. You know, a lot of people are already using Axiom or whomever. Sometimes it's a matter of helping them to better understand what they're getting from that list provider.
And we
kind of go on autopilot with that at times as well. And I don't want to go too far onto that, but there are specific things that providers are already capable of providing, but they may not be giving that. One example is we're working with a client that is mostly marketing to retirees. And part of the criteria, this is a fairly expensive item that they're marketing to, so part of the criteria of and they said, we've got a contract, we don't need any list help. So my question was, well, what do your customers look like right now? And can you tell me, so we started to go through it, and we found out that the majority of their customers had a net worth value over $100,000. If their net worth wasn't over $100,000, they couldn't afford this product. But what they didn't know was they didn't even know that they had net worth. They had that data appended and they had it in there, but they had never gone to the provider and asked for that. So just stepping them through that exercise, we're able to find out that they're new customers. They don't need to be prospecting to anybody under, you know, under 100,000 in net worth, and they were previously doing that. So I hope that's not too far into the weeds and kind of gets
perfect.
A little more specific. Okay, good question. We could probably talk on this page for the rest of the presentation, but I've got more slides to show you. So the next question I always like to ask, or I should say I get asked, and I'm sure you do too, is direct mail still effective? We were just at the Exact Target show, so there were 8,000 people there that were digital marketers, right? And they're looking at us going, why are you here when, you know, with direct mail? Is it even working anymore? But where it's really working, and we talked about this earlier too, is when you're combining digital, online, and offline. So that's where we're seeing some real growth, and that's where the industry is seeing growth. So a recent study showed that digital companies that are combining direct mail with email are seeing a 62% lift. Now, there's a lot of different applications around that, and again, I don't want to take too much time on that, but one specific example could be if you have a list of members. We've got a large box company that we're working with that has a list of members, and they want to encourage more of their customers to become members. Well, they can't email those people if they haven't opted in, and they also can't email them if they don't have it. So we're doing postcard mailers to existing members to encourage them to actually go online, and that's working really well. Other cases, we're using email to alert someone to something that's coming in the mailbox. So, you know, watch your mailbox in the next 2 days. You're going to be getting an exciting offer from us. So there's multiple ways and directions that you can combine those. But the point is that email, direct mail is working, and it's out there, and it's still something that we as direct mail producers should be helping our clients understand and be aware of. We're doing work with online companies that have no brick and mortar, completely all purchases, everything are completely online, and we're doing direct mail for them. We've done a couple of recent campaigns for Uber, as an example, where we're reaching people through direct mail to get them to be aware of Uber, and they're working. So again, identify where holes exist and find a solution, as opposed to finding an entire solution. None of us have that. So here's an example of the Trunk Club mailer that I just talked to you about. Front and back, very simple self-mailer, introducing them to the opportunities to go online and join Trunk Club. So the other piece I want to talk to you about in terms of differentiating ourselves beyond workflow and channels is within the data itself, finding a niche for that. And where we have found a niche is in the messaging side, an area that's virtually untouched right now. So there's a lot of talk around predictive analytics and a lot of talk around personalization, but really when it comes down to really understanding what are the primary drivers to a campaign to get somebody to respond, that's where A/B testing comes in and happenstance and some guessing, but it's mostly guessing up to this point. Your clients are making assumptions around what they're going to say to whom. And what we're doing is applying science the same way that science and math is applied to other types of data analytics. We're applying it to messaging to really understand the mind of that shopper. So a good example of this is Barbara showed that slide that explained that everybody wants personalization regardless of age, whether millennials or not. And what we're finding out is that everybody is motivated by two or three or four different reasons regardless of their age. So we had a very large client come to us and say, well, we want to drive more of the millennials to sign up for our program. So what do we say to those millennials? My answer was, we don't know yet, but whatever you're saying to motivate those millennials, you're also going to be saying to anybody of any other age group. Now, the offer might be different or the channel or the cadence, but how you're going to motivate those people is separate from what their age is. So how are we doing this as a large printer? Well, that's my next bullet, and that's partner selectively. So we have partnered with a company called iNovum. This individual is called Dr. Howard Moskowitz, And he was featured on one of the top 10 TED Talks. So if you go out to TED Talks and you look for Malcolm Gladwell, his one of the top 10 talks that are on there that he did, he spends his entire talk explaining Dr. Moskowitz and his history with experimental design. Well, in hearing that, we were able to determine that we can use that science, that proven science, and apply it to our customers in terms of motivating them and understanding their stimuli. So this is a very unique partner for, you know, a quote-unquote printer to go out in the industry and align with. But it's proven to be a really strong success for our existing clients as well as helping us gain new clients. So what is Empirical Insights? It's based on two core principles by Dr. Moskowitz that he's developed over the past 30 years. The first one is, as I keep alluding to, and that's like people look for different reasons. So what I mean by that is, again, regardless of the age or anything else, let's take a consumer as an example. There are at least three different types of shoppers that are coming into these big box stores. And this is based on Dr. Moskowitz's research, but we also drill this down more specific for each client. The first person is a classic. They come in, they get their case of diapers, and they get their 100 bottles of water, and then they're out of there. The second person is imaginative. They like to kind of look around and explore and find out what's new and you know what's maybe a little hidden gem here and there. And the third one is elaborate, and that may not be necessarily tied to a SKU, meaning they're not just always getting the most expensive things, but it's what is their experience that they're looking to have. The challenge is you can give me all of the big data that you want, no matter how you divide these and segment these people up, and you will never know what that person looks like. So let me give you an example. If someone's walking into to purchase a car and you look at that person, you as a salesperson look at that individual, you pretty much already size them up. You know, here's a guy that's looking for prestige, or here's a woman that's looking for economy and safety, or here's, you know, whatever that is, whether you like it or not, you automatically size up somebody. But you really don't know what that person's motivation is simply by looking at them or simply by, you know, making an assumption about their appearance, whether that appearance is data or whether that appearance is in real life. So that's one principle. Attributes, meaning data appends, do not equal attitudes. Now, data appends are still critical. I love them. I'm a believer in them, and we use them. But in the case of understanding why someone would buy, they can be very deceiving. The second one is that why don't we just ask people then, right? Why don't we just do a focus group or a survey and go out and ask people? Well, the reason is that motivation is not something that can be intellectualized. Motivation is something that is a response to a stimulus. And how Dr. Moskowitz found that out and how Malcolm talks about it in TED Talks is that he went out and he tested 3,000 different, and tested meaning surveyed, 3,000 different Folgers drinkers, because Folgers came to Howard and said, how can we make our coffee better? Can you go ask our customers? And what those 3,000 people gravitated towards a central answer, and that broad-based answer was a deep, dark roast. So Howard said, I can't go back to Folgers with that. That's basically what all of the commercials say. They're just mimicking and parroting, you know, what marketing is telling them, deep, dark roast. So he came up with 48 or so different variations of coffee, and he went out and he field tested it. And what he found was that there are certain clusters of people and a large cluster of people that liked sugary, creamy, weak coffee. But you're never going to see any kind of advertising that says, you know, now weaker and available for more cream. So you can't simply just ask people what is stimulating them or what is motivating them. So how do we do that? Well, there's a very specific process that we go through, and the reason I have this Cirque du Soleil individual up here is because it's very much like Cirque du Soleil. If you've never seen a Cirque show and you wanted somebody to describe it to you, they'd probably start telling you things that you already knew came from a circus. Well, there's trapezes, there's trampolines, there's clowns, there's music, and you would say, well, so what? Why am I paying $150 to see a circus? But if you've ever seen a Cirque show, you know that it's completely a whole different experience that has taken proven processes and exercises that are out there and created something that's never been done before. And that's essentially what we are doing with Howard's patent, is he has taken statistics and processes that have been around for years and years and years, some of them over 20 years, and he's put them together into a holistic experience so that we can really help our customers apply those same types of statistics to their existing messages to, again, identify and understand their customers better. I promise I won't take you through this whole slide, but it's basically a schematic of how we go through our process. So there's a real systemic process that we created that we've developed and that we've stepped through with our clients. So again, we've gotten into a very, very small, narrow niche and just are talking about messaging with our clients, but we've built a very solid process around just that. And we do have to remind our clients when we're going through this exercise, oh, you know what, you're talking about cadence, and that we really can't, you know, this is not going to address how often you should be talking to somebody. Or, you know what, this is irregardless of the channel, so I can't give you, this isn't going to give you any answers around if you should email or direct mail. So when you find that hole and you fill it, you really kind of have to stay in it, if you will. It's not to say we can't give them advice and direction like we do with the list of pins at the front, but you really need to stay, in my opinion, you really need to stay focused instead of trying to do everything, because for my next slide, it has to be actionable. When you come in with all these great ideas and you don't have any kind of actionable response to it, you're not going to keep that customer. You're not going to bring them the value that they're looking for. So let me step you through a couple of examples. Are there any questions, Barb, before I jump into case studies?
I'm going to let you roll here. We're good. I've got
okay.
A couple coming in. But
okay,
go
good.
Ahead.
So this is Floor Corporation. They're part of a $1 billion carpet company. This is a specialty group in Chicago, and they came to us and said that our existing customers, we are looking for more customers like that, but we don't really know what our existing customers look like because they only buy about once in their lifetime, maybe twice. So we don't have a real strong understanding of that. So we don't have anything to back that up with to really know how to go talk to other people. You know, when you talk about personalization, what do we say to them? Do we talk about this feature or that experience or this location? What is it, you know, just because we can do personalization, we don't know what we can do with it. So what we did was go to their existing customer base because, again, they want their new customers, they think, to look like they're existing. And we really started to understand from a messaging standpoint not only what messages were resonating the best with them, but what pockets of people they fit into. So what kind of categories, kind of like that shopper slide that I showed you. And without getting into huge detail, we found that there were three types of shoppers that are specific and motivated to Floor Corporation. So we created three versions. They were not 100% personalized down to the individual level, except for the name and address. They were versioned to those three different groups of shoppers, and we put the names into those three groups. And then there was, of course, the control. So we ran this and we tracked this, and how we tracked this was very simply, it was a coupon, and we asked this question up front, how we need to be able to track this, so let's work together on figuring out the mechanism to do that. You can ask that question. Again, from a personalization standpoint or variable print, it's very adamant that you do ask that question up front, because all you're going to get at the end was, it was too expensive, we'll go back to static printing. So you have to be able to tie that back somehow. And it can be a painful process. You need to be able to track it, and you need to be able to determine what is it going to take to pay for this difference and help the customer lead themselves to that answer. So in the case of Floor, we had three different versions against the control. We tracked it all the way back to the cash register by a specific coupon code. We were able to do that, and we had a 31% lift against the control. In one of those versions, we actually had more of a lift. I'm sorry. Did you have a question?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I just had a quick question. Somebody had asked while you were speaking, if you, with the work that you've done with Howard Moskowitz, Moskowitz, if
Howard.
Say it 50 times fast. If you white labeled his solution, or if you actually used the brand.
That's a great question. We did both, actually. We white-labeled the solution. We call it Empirical Insights. But we bring Dr. Moskowitz's scientists to the table with us. So
okay.
There is no, you know, it's full disclosure with the client. And there's really no, it's almost to our advantage, because otherwise you're kind of looking at it sideways going, you're a printer and, you know, you have a, you know, you won the Thomas Edison Award and you're using a 30-year-old patent, or, you know, not a 30-year-old patent, but a patented process that's been around for 30 years. You know, we really kind of don't have any credibility if we don't do that. But secondly, customers are, you know, and the market is a lot more open to that nowadays. Everybody knows that, you know, that's out buying. They're looking for kind of a single source solution for whatever that hole is you're trying to fill, but they don't want to have to go to multiple people, you know. If you can provide an alternative to that, and the same with Speedion. That's why I was happy to mention it to you. I mean, we use them all the time. They're a great partner of ours, but they're not ours, you know. They are their own company, and we bring them in when a client needs that fit, and then we give them the choice, you know. So I think that nowadays, that to me, that's the best way to partner. Strategic partnerships that are white labeled. I think in a lot of years I've seen very few of them work out. But again, that's just my opinion.
Great, thanks.
So now you've been staring at the slide. This is actually in Dr. Moskowitz, one of his books. He talks about this case study, and it was for the affinity card for World Cup in Hong Kong. For MasterCard, and there were three groups that competed for this business. The other three groups, I'm going short on time, so I'm going to go through this. The other three groups failed. Dr. Moskowitz not only beat the goal, but it beat the goal within 6 months, which is critical with an affinity card. The thing about this is when I talk about actionable results, we basically came back, Dr. Moskowitz came back to this client and said, here's what I found out, and here are three statements for this segment, and here are three or four statements for this segment, and here's how your segments look. Here's who you go after. Go for it. That's all you need to do. So it isn't this, you know, it isn't something that's real complex. There's a lot of data behind it. There's 50,000 points of data that points to that simplicity, but it's really about getting the customer something that they can run with right now and then having the information to back it up, whatever it is that you're going to be doing. Same with St. Mary's Hospital. We've been running this program for over 500 days now in one acute care wing at St. Mary's. The other acute care wing, we do not have this system in place. And the goal here is to reduce readmissions for congestive heart failure of patients that are admitted. The only way that we can modify and get a patient to not be readmitted is to get them to take care of themselves once they're released from the hospital. Well, how can you do that? Well, you can keep telling them all the information while they're there, right? Keep telling them, you have to exercise or you're going to be back in here and you have to follow your diet and all of this. But if you can understand what that person's motivation is, why would they take care of themselves? And then you can communicate to them that way and give them their little take-home care kit that is relevant to what their motivation is. Well, as you can see, we're able to consistently, month to month, we're at an 80% reduction in hospital readmissions. Really remarkable. American Heart Association, very similar. This was an email campaign. We'd love to print for them, but right now this is emailing. Out to their existing members, they know they're going to get solicited for funds. So how do we ask our members that know they're going to get solicited, how do we motivate them to actually donate without alienating them? Again, understanding the motivational groups, there are four in this particular case versus two with MasterCard, we had a 42% lift. So to be able to have those actionable steps, and the reason we can get there so quickly is because we are coming in with a very simplified final deliverable for that client that says, here, just go test it. Take this and see if it works. And then if it works, then we can scale it up. And that's a real critical piece with anything from my standpoint that's data driven. So coming back to where I started, the big thing is really understanding direct marketing and where it's going, because people ask you that. Your customers want to know that. The next piece is identifying where those holes exist. And, you know, again, coming in with a solution that you're passionate about. When you're passionate about something, you don't have to pretend that you know everything. You don't have to try to, you know, answer every single thing for them. You can focus it down and say, this is what we know. We know that if you put, you know, red cars on this piece and blue cars on this piece, it's probably going to drive more, and that's what we want to really help you understand. Whatever that is, pick that spot and become the expert. And then again, if you need help, then partner selectively. Again, I don't recommend white labeling it. I recommend being forthright and on front with your clients, and then your partners have that freedom to be. If you partner selectively, then they have that freedom to communicate directly with your clients, and lend their expertise to them. It really brings value to the customer. And then the last one again is actionable items, actionable solutions. Make it something simple. Don't overcomplex.
Great. Luke, I do have some questions that came in for you. The first one, and somebody asked to repeat the name and maybe even just spell it out. Who's the data partner that you use sometimes?
Oh, sure. It's called Speedion. It's like speed, Speedeon.
Okay, perfect.
Speedion.
Now,
and they just moved. I think they're in Connecticut.
Okay, perfect. Now, the next question is, you know, I talked a little bit about you've got data coming in from a lot of different sources. If you drive, how are you tracking users' behaviors on websites so that you can personalize content even further? Are you doing that, I guess, is the best question. And if so, how?
No, well, there's a lot of, I mean, the tools that we're using for tracking user behaviors are no different than, you know, any others that are out there, Google Analytics or whatever. It depends what we're on. If it's directly online or if it's some type of call to action, but the users' click throughs and where they're moving on the site really isn't the focus of ours. That's more of a predictive type of analytics behavior, and that's, you know, as I said before, we're picking a spot. That's not an area that we're really strong on. The only thing I'm really focused on tracking is that net result. Did they purchase? Did they follow through on that call to action?
Okay, great. Now, obviously you have a lot of, and this is the million-dollar question that I get asked all the time, you obviously have a lot of both print and non-print services.
Yes.
What do you bill for, and how do you communicate that to a customer?
We bill for everything.
And okay, how we communicate that to the customer. That's a good answer.
We all have to be, you know, we're in business to be in business and to stay in business. So you have to. And I'm being a little bit, you know, facetious. Of course, there's the pre-sales, and there are certain things that you do to prove. Prove your worth to a new prospect, but how we charge for it is it's going to be on a client by client basis, and you really do have to line item these things out, especially when you're cross channel providing something, because it may be coming from different buckets within the corporation, right? So data might be coming from somewhere, print might be coming from somewhere else, you know, data meaning list. Or any kind of analytics, the print might be coming from somewhere else, and the email or any kind of social channels might be coming from somewhere else. So we are somewhat reluctantly, but mostly driven to itemize as much of that as we can. Does that make sense?
Yeah, when you say itemize it, and let me ask this a little differently, but for instance, are you basically using, and I'm going to, kind of like an agency model to do that, where you're saying, hey, this is the project, here's the statement of work that goes with it, and then here's the associated costs?
Exactly. Well said.
Okay. Now, the next question, clearly, you have different types of clients with different levels of data security.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, we've heard, you know, my client doesn't want to give me their data. They don't want to do this. They don't. How do you get through that hurdle to make customers comfortable with you being able to work their data over to deliver better results?
That's a good question. And the first part of that depends on, and this is obvious, but it depends on the market, right? So there are very specific requirements for our financial clients versus our healthcare clients versus a retail client. So beyond the obvious requirements that we have to follow and adhere to for those three different verticals as an example, the next piece is, what is it that we're going to be doing? So if we have a large client that may be financial or tax-based that we cannot know specific information about them, but we need to work with that data file, they can simply append the name of the names of those people off, and we can work with the remainder of that file and just have a unique code to each number. So it's really going to be a case by case basis. Does that answer your question?
I think that gets at it. Now one last question here, and then we'll wrap up. But are you analyzing data across channels so that you can score best messaging and calls to action?
That's a really good question. That's almost more of a predictive, again. So we somewhat are, but I think that's important to do. Just because we're not focused on that doesn't mean it's not important. But to me, that's more on the predictive side of okay. analytics. So that ties back into using data for some of those other components I listed that at the moment we're not really focused on.
Okay, got it. Well, I'm going to wrap up with just a couple final comments. And you know, I think we all understand that marketers are very focused on hitting their targets. And we're finding that there are service providers that aren't as sophisticated out there as SG360 that are not as advanced. And it's time for those service providers to really move forward. What I tell everybody, and I think Luke did a great job at articulating this, is you really need to understand that marketing executive's strategy, which assets are available, what the goals of any campaign are, and then link that with the data that you've got, you know, a hypothesis that should lead to achieving those goals, test it, and then adapt tactics. And we tell everybody, you know, it's a journey, it's not a destination. And I think what you heard Luke say is, you know, he's testing things. So you're going to learn, you're going to adapt that strategy for a specific campaign, and then hopefully you'll have the ability to improve it. The other component that you've got to take a look at is nobody can go it alone. And I think Luke articulated that well. And you're going to have to build or partner to get in the game. I think the big message is, you know, for everybody, you want communications to be relevant. You want that offer, that discount to be tailored based on known preferences. You want to make it easy for that end customer to engage, and you want it to be personal. So I'll wrap it up with one final quote, and it's from Lee Iacocca. And I think he summed it up when he said, you know, you can have brilliant ideas, but if you can't get them across, your ideas won't get you anywhere. And what you really need to do is you need to make sure that you've got the right data with the right message going to the right person. I'd like to thank everybody for their time and attention this afternoon. And, you know, if you have any other additional questions that we didn't get to, feel free to send me an email. And then, you know, if you have any comments, please feel free to fill out our feedback survey. So everybody, thanks, and have a great rest of the day.